This morning we have several scriptures, and as I read these, I want you to listen for what they have in common. The first one is from Mark. In the morning, while it was still very dark, Jesus got up and went out to a deserted place, and there he prayed. And from Matthew, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side, while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. And from Luke, then he withdrew from them about a stone's throw, knelt down, and prayed. And from John, they took away the stone that was lying against the tomb of Lazarus, and Jesus looked upward and said, Father, I thank you for having heard me. This is the word of God.
Thanks be to God. Okay, as I said earlier, we are going to start a message series on the subject of a prayer. For a long time, I have wanted to do this. I have wanted to embrace this challenge, but I wasn't sure whether I have that courage. The more prayers I feel remain unanswered, the more, yes, I have a desire to get help with my questions around this struggle over prayer. Meanwhile, I have heard lately more than ever voices inside and outside crying out for help. I also have sensed somehow divine nudge that calls me to take courage to embrace this challenge. Not fear, to be honest. Not fear to be vulnerable in my wandering and wanderings while I stay centered with this desire to become a more prayerful person. Name myself a person of a prayer. So as I begin this series, this is my hope and prayer that with this opportunity, your confidence grows in trusting that God speaks on the matters that keep you awake and anxious nowadays. And that your understanding of what God is doing in you and around you may increase. So you can delight more in taking time to pray. This is my prayer as we begin this message series. There have been many books published on the subject of prayer and many stories of prayer giant, right? This time, as I prepared for this series, I came down to three specific books as resources and reference for this message series. I list them here with the most recently published one first. Learning to Pray, a Guide for Everyone, written by Jesuit priest James Martin. And actually, I had a screen to show these three books, but it's off, but the people on Facebook can still see those titles. The second book is Prayer, with the subtitle, Does It Make Any Difference? Written by award-winning Christian author Philip Yancey. And thirdly, but treasured for the longest period compared to the other, is Prayer, Find the Heart's True Home, written by Richard Foster. I highly recommend those three books. Okay, let's get started with data provided by Pew Research Center. Pew Research Center regularly conducts surveys on religious affiliations and beliefs and practices and social and political views in the United States. And according to their 2014 Religious Landscape Survey, right? It sounds like it's going to be a very thorough and comprehensive survey, and which surveyed more than 35,000 Americans. And there, 55% of American adults say that they pray at least daily. And 16% say that they pray once a week. And 6% say that they pray monthly. And 23% answer they seldom or never pray. Okay, if we narrow down to Wisconsin, okay, they survey 600 Wisconsinite adults. And here, find where you are. 46% say that they pray daily, which is 9% lower than national data in this group. And 20% say they pray weekly, and 8% say they pray monthly, and 25% say they hardly or never pray. Okay, I wish I could find more in-depth information from their report, such as what people say about their reasons why they pray or why they don't pray. And I'm not talking about atheists here, right? Because that, to them, the reason is obvious. They don't believe in God's existence. I'm talking about people like you and me, believers, who don't pray. So Father James Martin considers in his book 10 reasons why believers don't pray. I am going to introduce them, and you see yourself which one speaks the voices that you have heard from your inner self and from your family and friends. First, it's because people were not taught how to pray. Most likely, it has to do with their living environment. If you grow up in a prayer-free environment, then it's not surprising that you don't know much about prayer, right? The reason number two is this. They consider prayer something reserved for people who live a holy life, like a priest. Again, this book is written by a Catholic priest. They think they are not worthy. But we, Christians, know that our faith in God does not depend on our worthiness, but solely on God's grace and God's desire for us. In that way, prayer is not reserved for priests, but for every believer, right? That's our Protestant faith. But reason number three, people had bad experiences with prayer and feel that they have failed at it. And this could be a case when unanswered prayers grow in your life. So one quick side note. One pastor was giving his testimony at the seminary he graduated and turning to the dean who all the time challenged the seminarian, including that pastor, to not pray for a large church. The pastor said, "I confess, I did ask God for a big church, and I also asked God for a pretty wife." Then to everyone in the chapel, he continued to give his testimony, saying, "I'm not sure my prayer was answered. My prayer maybe was almost answered. Instead of getting a big church and pretty wife, I got a pretty church and a large, big wife." Okay. I say this because I wanted to acknowledge that many grow mad or frustrated with the result of a prayer. In response, they give up without allowing themselves the chance to experience the natural ups and downs of a prayer and of a spiritual life. Reason number four, they have been told that they are praying wrong. But there is no wrong way to pray, right? If there is one wrong way to pray, it is to pray with dishonesty. C.S. Lewis said, "We must lay before God what is in us, not what ought to be in us." Reason number five, people are turned off by religion, and then, therefore, they are turned off by prayer. In other words, as they quit their religious group, they have quit prayer. Reason number six, Father James says that people who don't pray could have been encouraged to think about what they already do as prayer. I feel this raises the question, what is prayer, right? So we will talk about it next week. Then reason number seven, people don't see any reason to pray since God already knows what they are thinking. But I want you to hear this. Prayer is not a matter of giving God new information. In the words of Father James, a spiritual director, it's not a question of information, but of whether you are willing to tell God what you are feeling. In other words, it's about trust. It's about relationship. We are in a relationship with God in which we freely say in prayer, God, you know I need this. You know what I feel. We can start from there. With these seven reasons, which I very briefly kind of look over, voice, the people who hardly pray anymore. But the next three reasons may be more commonly named by the people who are on the way losing their joy of praying and their commitment to prayer. Maybe you can find you there. People say that they are too busy to pray. I'm sure that for many of us, this probably comes to the very top in the list of our answer to the question why we pray less than we want. Yes, we want to pray. We like the overall idea of a prayer, but we don't have a time for it, right? But to be blunt, isn't it more accurate to say that we don't make a time for it, while we make a time for other things? Father James says, here a more apt, more proper question might be, how important do you consider God? So the next ninth reason might replace the too busy to pray excuse here. What can be added there? It is to admit that we are lazy. Beneath the avoidance of prayer lies the lethargy of our spiritual life, perhaps the lethargy of our physical life as well. Simply, I don't like it. I don't give care much to that. Lastly, Father James diagnoses that people don't pray because they fear change. Do you worry that you will become religious fanatics if you pray a lot? Like God will invite you to do something outlandish, like sell your possession to give it to the poor, or quit your job to start pursuing ordained ministry, or kind of convince your children, grandchildren, go to that ministry? Or what about some physical yet still stunning changes, like speaking truth to power boldly and becoming more generous and free in giving away? Do you fear that kind of change if you pray a lot? Those who don't pray for this reason, good thing is this, know that prayer has power. By deciding not to pray, they choose status quo over true engagement with God, who is God, who is sovereign us. In other words, people don't pray because they don't want to see, or they don't embrace, even though they see needs of change in their lives or in the lives of those who they care about. Another side that this avoidance of prayer reveals about our understanding of prayer is that we consider prayer only for issues and people who are in need of change. Here is one simple story that sounds funny. Maybe you may relate to it. The Sunday school teacher asked, "Hey, Johnny, tell me frankly, do you say prayers before eating?" No, sir, little Johnny replies. "I don't have to. My mom is a good cook. No need to improve her cooking skill." And at the earlier service, I saw one child turn to mom. He's like, you need that prayer. Do you pray less simply because life goes well? There's no problem. Need change. In this message series, we will learn that there are more than prayers or petitions. So probably I will have a chance to introduce this simple book by Anne Lamott in this series with this title, Three Essential Prayers. Help! Thanks! Wow, yes, it's more than a prayer for asking for help. Yes, there is a prayer to express gratitude, a prayer to recognize the wonder of God's world. Again, I hope that this message series will enrich your prayer life. On top of those 10 reasons for why people don't pray, I'd like to add this one. People don't pray because suffering is too heavy for them to utter words of a prayer. Are you under the heavy weight of life burdens? In the middle of all kinds of entangled life problems, you don't know where to start a prayer? Perhaps that's you. For some, no words but tears have been found when they bring themselves to the presence of God. For some, to say, hey, life is busy, that's a real cry. But don't you think these reasons why believers don't pray can be the very reason why we do pray? We are under a heavy yoke, so we shall pray and unburden ourselves. God has spoken to us and made changes in our lives, so we shall pray, trusting that God changes us for the better. We feel flabbiness, less grateful, more irritating, but we shall pray and awaken our spirit. We are busy, so we shall pray and seek for direction and guidance. God already knows what we are going through and what we are thinking, so we shall pray and listen to what God has to say about them. Just as there are many reasons why we are discouraged to not pray, there are many reasons why we can be encouraged to pray. I feel here I circle the mystery of a prayer, a mystery that pulls me constantly while I am tempted and forced by some other forces to give it up. With the same reasons. Then the concluding answer to this question, why pray? Is this, because Jesus did. Today, in the four passages that Sherry-Ann read for us, we found Jesus prayed. But the gospel records over a dozen specific prayers by Jesus, along with several parables and teachings on the subject of prayer. Jesus not only followed the normal Jewish tradition of visiting synagogue, the house of prayer, he also prayed in private, right? Throwing himself away from the people, he took time to pray, and he taught his disciples to do likewise. So such a prayer life made an impression on his followers. So five times the Gospels mention Jesus' practice of praying alone. Then Jesus turned to prayer in times of trouble, as we see his prayers in the Garden of Gethsemane, on the cross, and also in the storm. And he prayed when life and ministry seemed to go well as well. He prayed for common and everything. Yes, the Lord's Prayer mentions what? Daily bread, temptation, daily temptation, right? And relationship in danger. These requests are hardly trivial, but they are very common in everyone's life. And he lifted up special prayers for others, such as praying for the sick, praying at his friend Lazarus' graveside, and praying for children brought to him by their mothers, and even praying for his persecutors from the cross. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing. And Jesus also relied on prayer as a kind of spiritual recharging. Again, it was not hidden to his friends and disciples that after an exhausting day of ministry, he would withdraw to an isolated place to pray. Yes, we followers of Jesus are encouraged to pray because Jesus never gave up praying. But I feel like you asking me back. Hey, to know that Jesus prayed is not an effective encouragement to pray. Jesus was different. He, as the Son of the Living God, has a special connection with God, which I don't have. You may say it. In response, this can be added. Don't you think then Jesus wanted to model for us through his prayer life? He showed his prayer life for us. But honestly, I cannot answer clearly why Jesus, the Son of the Living God, the one who casted out demons, healed the sea, had to, or even chose to, pray. I can't, though, answer another question. That is how God feels about our plight and our needs as I see Jesus praying. Yes, Jesus was true God and true human. He was the one who could say, as he did, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. Then, seeing Jesus pray, we see God pray. Seeing Jesus pray in compassion and love for the people, we can tell ourselves, that is how God feels for me. So now, I would like to close this first sermon in this series in the words that are inspired by Richard Foster's invitation. Perhaps you have never prayed before, except in anguish or terror. It may be that the only time the divine name has been on your lips has been in angry swear word. Never mind. The Father's heart is open wide. The Son is praying for you. The Spirit leads you to the heart of God. Perhaps you do not believe in prayer. You may have tried to pray and were profoundly disappointed and disillusioned. You seem to have little faith or none. It does not matter. The Father's heart is open wide. The Son is praying for you. The Spirit leads you to the heart of God. Perhaps you are bruised and broken by the pressures of life. Others have wronged you, and you feel scarred for life. You have old, painful memories that have never been healed. You avoid prayer because you feel too distant, too unworthy, too defiled. Do not despair. The Father's heart is open wide. The Son is praying for you. The Spirit leads you to the heart of God. Perhaps you have prayed for many years, but the words have grown brittle and cold. Little ever happens anymore. God seems remote, inaccessible. Listen to me. The Father's heart is open wide. The Son is praying for you. The Spirit leads you to the heart of God. Perhaps prayer is the delight of your life. You have lived in the divine milieu for a long time, can attest to its goodness. But you long for more, more power, more love, more of God in your life. Believe me, the Father's heart is open wide. The Son is praying for you. The Spirit leads you to come higher up and deeper in to the heart of God. So everyone, regardless what meanings or no meaning prayer has had in your life, you are invited to enter God's heart of love in a sweet and sacred time of prayer. Yes, when you bring yourself into a time of prayer, please know that you are brought down deep to the heart of God. So, now I invite you to sing with me as a response to this message. First verse of this beloved hymn, Sweet Hour of Prayer.